right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
And a big thanks to Darren and all the gang on 2FM Drive. It is Monday, the 24th of March. I'm Andrew O'Connor. You are listening to Game On with myself and Ruby Walsh.
And coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Stephen Kelly and Alan Cawley reflect on some rare back-to-back wins for the Republic of Ireland. Plus, Shane Dawson sits down with FAI Chief Football Officer Mark Canham.
In Gaelic Games, Austin O'Malley and Niall Moran take a broader view on what we can take from the final standings in the Allianz League. All of that, plus it wouldn't be Monday without our weekend sporting highlights. If you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552 or on WhatsApp on 087 187 200.
This is
2FM's Game On.
And before we get into all of that, a quick rundown on the headlines of the day. The FAI's Chief Football Officer, Mark Canham, has apologised personally and on behalf of the Association to former Republic of Ireland Women's Assistant Coach Colin Healy for the hurt which was caused to him following his departure from the role. Healy didn't have his contract renewed following the departure of Eileen Gleeson as women's boss last year, despite being assured by Canham that he would be retained. We'll hear more of that a little bit later when he speaks to our own Shane Dawson. Meanwhile, the Ireland Women's team will play the United States in two friendlies later this year. The first game will be in Denver on the 26th of June, with the second to take place 3 days later in Cincinnati. And tonight, the Ireland under-21s will play Hungary in a friendly in Murcia. And England will look to make it two wins from their first two World Cup qualifiers when they host Latvia at Wembley in Group K. In Gaelic Games, fixture details have been confirmed for next weekend's Allianz Football League finals, all of which will be played at Croke Park. On Saturday, the Division 4 decider between Limerick and Wexford will start at 5 and will be followed at 7.15 by the Division 2 clash of Monaghan and Roscommon. There'll be another doubleheader on Sunday with Kildare and Offaly to meet in the Division 3 final at 1.45, while Kerry and Mayo will battle it out for the Division 1 title at 4. Elsewhere, the Hurling League Division 1A final between Cork and Tipperary will go ahead at Parky Cueve on the 6th of April from 4, and before that, the Division 1B final between Offaly and Waterford will take place in the same venue. And finally, golf ahead of the next month's Masters at Augusta. Shane Lowry is up to a career high of 12th place in the world rankings after he finished tied for 8th in the Valspar Championship last night. They're the day's headlines. Ruby, what a weekend. Happy Monday to you.
Same to you, Andrew. Yeah, it was a great weekend, wasn't it? Great sport. I had a bit of an Alan Cawley weekend. I was on the couch all day Sunday watching sport, and I was thinking, yeah, that Cawley lives some life, doesn't he?
He does, and he's beside me now living his best life. Alan, did you have a good weekend?
I had a fantastic weekend, yeah. I was on the couch and I was out and about as well, Andrew. I actually went to a basketball quarter final. The playoffs was on Aina over in Rathfarnham against Sligo All-Stars, and it was absolutely brilliant, I have to say. And it got me thinking, and myself and Ruby have spoken about this before, and I was saying it to Austin off air. Aina, who have a brilliant history, I don't know the whole kind of background in terms of the basketball. I'm no expert by any means. I was only there as a spectator. But they have a brilliant history. I know that they were the champions last year. And I looked at their hall and I thought, like, for the champions of Ireland and where we're coming from with the League of Ireland, with the stadiums and facilities and the amount of sports, I went away in the car thinking, the amount of sports that must be crying out for funding in this country is absolutely incredible, I'd say. And it's unbelievable what we're able to achieve without that funding when you consider all the sports that are crying out for it. And all I ever hear is people crying out for it, and rightly so. And we're still able to maintain a high level and be really successful on the world stage at so many different sports, that imagine if we did get proper funding, what we'd be like.
Oh, we'd be unsufferable.
Is it about the funding though, Alan, or, and you as well, Austin, or is it about the amount of volunteers that you have in sport in Ireland?
Well, actually, Ruby, just as you said that, it was something I actually said to Alan just when we were discussing this. I said, like, it's about the altruism and the volunteerism within these sports that are actually keeping these going. And it's a brilliant thing. It's so authentic. Like, but I suppose if they did get that extra injection of cash, where it could actually bring us in that. But a lot of these, what, not that you class them as minority sports, but sports that are, you know, at a very high level, but are still looking to grow and maybe at a national level and so on, that they are actually kept alive by a small cohort of people within a club that are just night after night developing kids, bringing them through and keeping the game alive.
That's it, Ruby. I was observing kind of what was going on. There were so many individuals like that who were just purely there as volunteers, I'd say. They brought a load of kids out at half time as well, played games with kids. Just fantastic stuff that was going on. Yet, I'm sure these people are just doing it out of the goodness of their heart, which is phenomenal. But I just kind of taken it on a little bit with the likes of, say, Aina, who to me are at a very high standard, Sligo All-Stars, that you can still have your volunteers and doing great work. But I'm just talking about people crying out to maybe improve things at a standard and at a level, the likes of us in League of Ireland or whatever, that just to get to a stage where it becomes more professional with the proper facilities and resources that I think these clubs and these players or these teams deserve, because they're doing so much, yet there's still so much they could do, I feel, with a little bit of proper support and backing. And that's just me speaking as a sports fan across all, as I say, the broad spectrum. I'm sure it's difficult for government officials and all sorts because everybody is crying out for funding. But I'd love to think they could notice that at the different levels as well and see what's going on. It's phenomenal what's going on.
I suppose in other countries they haven't had the same level of sort of on investment and over decades, and it's sort of very difficult when you're in a sort of the standing point of we are here, and where we are is not in a good place when it comes to facilities.
No, definitely not. And that, like, I'm speaking from just my own love with the League of Ireland, definitely facilities, and I've been banging this drum for 10, 12, 15 years. I know it's in a good place now and people talking about it, but the facilities are dire. They really are still. So you can have all the interest that, and the hype at the moment, but people will soon start kind of disengaging with it if they feel as though they're going to a kind of a poor enough facility on a Friday night to watch a match. But it just got me thinking about those kind of brilliant players and teams on Saturday night. I loved it. It was brilliant. Brilliant night out. Brought the young fella, his little pal. We had a great evening. It was a great game as well. Really good standard. And I came away thinking, like, here's the Irish champions. I think the arena. And I just thought, surely they could have it. Like, it's a school hall, effectively, they're playing out of, with a few seats on the side of the court. Surely they could improve things for them even.
But does that go to economics and the population of the country? Are we, I'm far from a politician now, but are we
not
trying
yet,
to...
Ruby, not yet.
Oh, no
a niche. There is a niche.
There is not a niche for me, I'm afraid. And when you sit,
I might try it.
You have Colin, to sit, well, actually, no chance, you know, Colin. As much as I get off the fence, you're never on it. But when you look at our sports, is it not that we need to use our venues for every sport to get the most out of what we have, rather than trying to build individual venues for sports? It's collaboration, is what I mean.
Yeah, and if that's the case, Ruby, I'm all for it. Whatever works, and that, to me, that just comes to sensible people with joined up thinking and getting themselves together and putting their heads together. But unfortunately, what I find in sport, in my own kind of experience of it, there's so much self-interest that people are only caring about themselves and not thinking of the bigger picture and the wider picture. And I see that from a football aspect and a football point of view. And that's why maybe we're in the position that we are, because there's very few, in my view, in positions of power that think of the greater good of the game or the wider aspects of what you're trying to do to better the game. And if that means joined up thinking and building facilities and sharing stadiums and sharing facilities, I'm all for that, Ruby. But let's get people in the room that can put that in place.
I was trying to think of one example of a sport that is probably the best funded. Ruby, would it be right to say that probably racing is as close to being properly sort of have the proper infrastructure as we possible on this island? I know.
It's well funded, as in from the government, it most certainly is. But that's more because racing is not part of sport and it's an industry, Andrew. So you're funding an industry more so than funding a sport. And then the race courses, whilst the race courses do benefit from some of that to invest in the race courses, they have to match that capital with whatever they get from government. So if they take a capital grant of $500,000, they have to match it with a half of their own or $1 million or $2 million. And sure, look what you get for $500,000 these days. Mm. Wouldn't even build you a house, for God's sake.
No, shed.
You know what I mean? So, like, you could say, yeah, racing shed is, but that's why racing is not part of the sports budget, because it is an industry and a much broader industry. Employment, etc. You could rabbit on about that all night if you so wanted to. But when you do look at other sports, it's even, Alan, and you must see it with kids even, trying to decide, like, at what age do you say to a child you have to make a decision?
Yeah, and I suppose the idea of me bringing this up tonight, Ruby, wasn't the case of, you know, trying to play one sport off against the other. I'm just thinking about Ireland in general and how good we are at what we do. Yet I still don't think we get the support and the funding that's needed. As you said, it's down to good coaches, people with their heart in the right place, good volunteers to get people involved. And we're sport mad. We're absolutely sport mad. So if there was ever a country that should be getting supported, it's us, because we're sport mad. Like, we come in here on a Monday night and all we talk about is the brilliant weekend that we had, and we'll sit on a Friday night, we'll preview what's coming up the weekend. I'd love to know what people who are not involved in sport in this country do, because there's very few of them.
I think it's the derivatives as well that comes off the sport and all the different sports, in terms of the trickle down effect in terms of health and well-being and the societal effects of all that as well. I think, like, from an overview or an overarching view, from a political view, like that's where I would see the investment will really come back, and, you know, tenfold for a payback on it.
And to me, Austin, that's a no-brainer.
Absolutely. I think it's, given when we look at, you know, certain statistics across, you know, different platforms that we've looked at around health and well-being and that, and we can see different levels, you know, even in obesity in kids and all of this, and I just think it's an absolute, as you said, a no-brainer, and the add-on and the trickle-down effects are so positive for all.
So if you take part of the justice budget and part of the health budget and pump it into kids' sports, maybe in the long run it could pay.
I think so. I think, like, it's a no-brainer in terms of lessening probably the impact, maybe even on your hospitals long term down the line, and that as well. I know you might say, oh, that's a bit of a stretch, but if you target populations at that age group in terms of activity and fitness and health and well-being, I think it's just, given that platform, it definitely will come through in the wash the other end.
There's a mandate for your colleague. There you are now, the next general election. That's what you can run. That's what you can run on.
So if I thought you could help, I'd 100% get involved.
Austin, we've had Alan Cawley's highlight. Obviously, it was the basketball game with Aina on Friday night. What was your weekend highlight?
It was actually my weekend highlight, and it wasn't on any screen anywhere, but I had the good fortune and the honour to attend the AIB Club Player Awards Friday night in Croke Park. And it was actually a historic night in a lot of ways, in terms of maybe the different representation from teams there. But it was the first time that actually the four codes were brought together under the one banner, and that they were presented their awards together. So you had the men's hurling and football, the ladies camogie and football as well. And I just thought it was a brilliant, brilliant night. There was such great energy in the room, and it was a really unifying and collaborative night in terms of, like, you had a galaxy of, you know, sort of club stars there with their families all under the one roof. And it just made for, I thought, a really special night in terms of, even after all the awards were given out, 60 odd players were awarded individual awards for their for team and for their own excellence and so on. And then there was the four awards at the end in terms of player of the year from each one. But I just thought it was a different type of night, where you had conversations among, kind of cross-pollination between the different codes and that, and just to see the things play out there between the different families from the different codes coming together, and, you know, pictures being taken at the end. And it was a really, really, I just thought it was a really unifying kind of night. And I think it's just, again, maybe back to what we spoke to earlier about the power of sport and how it can be a force for good, but something like that, even to show in terms of the unity and the equity within the game and everybody coming together. It was a really, really positive night. And I think it's just a signal probably for where the GAA needs to go to long term.
And do you think that's sort of a blueprint for the future of the four organisations coming together and where it can go? As Joe Brolly would call it, the communitarianism.
The communitarianism, yeah. I really, really do think it is. And I think it's maybe a first step. And it was really well attended, and I think there was just such a, I keep going back to that spirit of collaboration, and it was just lovely to see everybody there together under one umbrella. And I just thought it made for a really, really great night. And as I said there, I think only good things could come from it, you know. And it was just giving parity to everyone across the board. It was and representation, and it was brilliantly brilliantly put forward. Damien Lawler and Aisling O'Reilly hosted it, and it was really, really, and Croke Park looked exceptional in terms of what they've put into it, and the backing by AIB as well.
Was Aina your highlight, Alan, or do you have another highlight?
Just quickly, and this is an unusual one really after a weekend, but it was more just two moments of exceptional brilliance that I've seen over the weekend, and I've never ever in all the years watching sports seen anything like what Billy Horschel did yesterday in the golf. I watched a good bit of the golf last night before the match, and he was stuck under a tree. Ruby, you might have been watching this, but he was stuck.
I watched the golf even when the match was on.
Well, look, that's for another argument, and I'll come back to you on that one. But he was stuck under a tree. He's a right-handed player, stuck under a tree, so he couldn't hit obviously a full swing with his right hand, so he spun the club around and played the shot left-handed, upside down the club was. I've never seen anything like it. Wow. And these players are just phenomenal. And then not only was it amazing that kind of escape, it landed about 20 foot from the hole and he walks onto the green and puts it and gets a birdie. It was just the most amazing up and down that you'll ever see. And there was one other one I saw over the weekend, basketball as well. Steph Curry, the American basketballer, took a shot from the tunnel where the players enter the arena into the far basket. It's absolutely ridiculous. And he's another one. So just a couple of moments of exceptional brilliance that I saw over the weekend. People should Google him.
I tried that Billy Horschel shot in Rush Golf Course a couple of weeks ago. Didn't quite have the
That's
same
That's what's wrong, tourist.
Looking for the ball,
didn't they quite have the same outcome? But Ruby, what was your highlight of the weekend?
Well, when my ball lands for Billy Horschel's balls, I just pick it up. Usually the way I play that poorly. My highlight was the golf, and I was turning over during the ads to see what was going on in the Aviva. But to watch Justin Thomas, Victor Hovland, obviously you were shouting for Shane Lowry, Seamus Power was already finished, but I thought for a back nine on a Sunday to have that many players, there must have been 8-10 players in with a shout all the way down the back nine, and I actually was shouting for Justin Thomas. I mean, such a great player to fall so far from the heights he was at and looked like he was going to win, and then bogey on 16, bogey on 18, and Victor Hovland just razor sharp all the way through. I thought it was really exciting for the final round of golf. So it was. So the golf was my highlight, and then I was flicking over and back from the soccer. I actually flicked over at the right time, just as Evan Ferguson scored. There was an ad in the golf, but no, the golf for me, Andrew.
There was a couple of choices I had. I was wondering would I go with the Grand Prix, and it was more the hilarity of Ferrari both getting disqualified, which was funny in its own right. And then I was slightly amused by Ronaldo missing the penalty, only because, not being nasty, but only because Hoyland had scored against Portugal last week and did the Ronaldo celebration, which apparently really annoyed Ronaldo. And he was denied the ability.
He had to come out afterwards and explain himself, Hoyland, didn't he? Which is ridiculous.
Yeah, but he looked up to Ronaldo, and you know, it was a compliment, I suppose. Mm. But it really annoyed Ronaldo for him to celebrate with his.
We'll see him in the Aviva again soon.
Yes, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But I suppose the highlight of the weekend was Ireland's victory. I suppose I'll be boring and predictable. Brilliant. And it was great to see Ireland score twice in consecutive games and have
from open play as well.
Yeah, from open play, and have two victories. And it was probably the first couple of games where you actually listened to the post-match analysis. Nobody was depressed. Yeah. People were slightly optimistic and trying to get it in perspective. We don't want to be too optimistic here. We're not going to win the World Cup yet. But there were little bits of green grass growing. And it was like, okay, spring is back. The Ireland's back. It could be back. But there were definitely improvements made. And I suppose just to see Evan Ferguson get his goal, and of course Adam Ida coming on getting his goal as well, and Mark Sykes was brilliant when he came on, and it was just nice to have something nice to talk about in terms of Irish football. So that was my highlight of the weekend. Not bad. It's a difficult way to start the programme.
Yeah.
Decades of underinvestment and a good weekend in sports. Back after the break.
Game on.
Association football.
Game on.
Soccer.
Ireland with possession on the far side with Robbie Brady, who sends it back to Nathan Collins, who pings it forward now for Evan Ferguson, who picks up possession right on halfway and goes charging down Ireland's right-hand side. Still Ferguson plays the ball into a central position, gets the return, Ferguson in on goal! What a goal! Evan Ferguson, 1-1! Lashes the ball high into the roof of the net. Oh, he's back! He is back with a bang. Evan Ferguson ties it up 1-1. Ireland back in front of the contest 3-2. What Ireland have managed to repel the free kick. Manning onto it for Ireland. The ball played forward. And now Sykes in a 1v1 situation. Driving forward. It's still Sykes inside the area. Rather wide. Just checks his run. The green shirt's arriving inside the area. Towards Ida! Who makes no mistake. Adam Ida plants the ball in the back of the net. Great work by Sykes. He checked his run, floated the ball over the top. the cavalry arriving, and Anamida delivers for Ireland, who lead now by 2-1.
Yes, that was Adrian Eames commentating on the Republic of Ireland maintaining their place in League B of the UEFA Nations League after following up a first leg win against Bulgaria with another 2-1 victory in Lansdowne Road to seal a 4-2 aggregate triumph in their promotion relegation playoff tie. Alan Cawley is here, as we've already heard, and delighted to say we're also joined by former Irish international Stephen Kelly. Happy Monday to you, Stephen.
Happy Monday, boys. You all right?
Yes. And what did you... Were you happy with that performance? I was just saying before the break that it was nice to have a little bit of positivity, especially from the post-match analysis.
Yeah, it was nice. I felt similar to the away leg. I think we created chances. We looked decent. I think we solid enough apart from the goal we gave away, which is just a little bit sloppy miscommunication in the box. But I think overall it looked like a decent performance. And the players looked... They knew their roles. They knew what they were doing. There was a certain directness about how we played, which I liked. And yeah, I just felt that all the positivity came from it. I think to go 1-0 down and come back and win 2-1 is really good. Listen, I don't think Bulgaria are great. I think they struggle. And I think being over there for the first game, you saw that there's a massive decline in Bulgaria's sport and football. And, you know, the fact that they only had about 4,000 fans in the home game was a sign of that. But you still have to beat the teams in front of you, and after going behind to come back the way we did. And I think at moments we produced some really kind of cutting football that created chances, which was really nice to see.
Cutting football, Al, creates chances. Are we beginning to figure out that we need results rather than fancy play?
Yeah, and I think that's what you get with this manager, to be fair, Ruby. He's very honest and he's very pragmatic in his approach, and he's a realist. And we've always maintained on here that there's more than one way to win football matches. And to be fair to him, I think we're seeing that, because out of possession, it looks like we've a plan where we're not as easy to get at, and teams are not creating as much chances against us, which is obviously a good thing. And they look a lot more solid, the team. And then, as Stephen was saying there, we played some really good patterns of play and created a few chances and a bit of cutting edge with the likes of Azaz, Mikey Johnson, who were the creative ones. And then you have Troy Parrott, who's in very good form. Ferguson getting his goal is a massive bonus. Ida coming off the bench as well. So I think there's the makings of a team there, Ruby, to be fair. And I always felt under Stephen Kenny that there was too much of an emphasis really on us in possession, and there was very little out of possession, whereas what we're getting with this manager is that pragmatism, and I think it bodes well. Albeit, as Stephen said, you'd have to throw in the fact that Bulgaria are very, very poor, and we will come up against stiffer tests. But I'm very hopeful about what we've seen this week. I think it's been two very positive performances, two good performances, and plenty to work on.
Stephen, is it fair to say when you have an international team, it should nearly pick itself? It should be fairly standard, bar for the odd injury here and there. Is Heimer starting to develop a team that you could say, well, that's the team, that's who's going to play?
Yeah, he is. He's starting to develop. I think the only thing about international football that changes that is the players playing for their club. And look what's happened recently. Jacob Ryan's come into the team at Everton, and he's playing every week in a side that's unbeaten in 9 games, and he scored just before the international break in the Premier League. So that shows the cats amongst the people vying for him to play. As a shining light hasn't been playing. So, you know, these factors change it, and it does affect it, because we don't have a guaranteed 11 that are going to be playing week in, week out for the club. Then that sometimes dictates how you can go and pick them. But for the manager, what he's done is he's picked the players in the first game that he felt looked like they've been playing regularly and they performed well, changed up in the second match to get those players in the minutes. So I think he did it really well. He got Evan in the second match, 2-1 up in the first day, getting minutes into a player's legs that we know we need game time. Goes and scores a goal, confidence level's high. But he used it well. He did what he needed to do in the right moments, I think, and the substitutes were good as well. So ideally, I'd love to have a set 11 that plays every week and that come in fit and healthy. But with international football, and with Ireland specifically, it's not always the case because of our game time.
I'll come to you in a second, Stephen. But Alan, just to start up front, and last night we had three or four good performances. Actually, we had Troy Parrott, we had Everton Ferguson, and we had Mark Sykes, who was brilliant when he came on. And but you're also going to have to then factor in the Chidozie Ogbeni coming back, Sammy Smodzic's. You know, how can you incorporate all five of those or four of those five in a starting 11?
I think what we're beginning to see, and something that we didn't have for a long, long time, is that there's a bit of a depth.
And Finazaz, sorry.
That there's a little bit of depth, Andrew. Yeah. So you're not going to play all five or six of them, but if you can have three or four, obviously, that will be on the pitch, and then you can have two or three that can come off the bench, or that there's competition for places. That's exactly what the manager wants, and that's what we want as well. Because as Stephen said as well, in terms of their game time at club level, they're not probably all going to start week in, week out. So it depends on that current or that moment in time when the camp is on and when the fixtures are on. But I certainly think it bodes well for us if we do have competition for places. And even Troy Parrott didn't get the goal last night, but I thought he played very well. Whereas Evan and Adam Ida came off the bench and he scored, doing quite well at Celtic too at the moment. So I think that can only be a good thing, Andrew, if we have competition. And Smodic was the one that we were all kind of pinning our hopes on, and now he's a long term injury. Ogbeni will come back, but I think Finazaz really put his hand up in the two games, and I've seen a lot of him at club level as well, with Middlesbrough, playing a good Middlesbrough team in championship level week in, week out. His numbers are good in terms of his goal return and assists as well, and I think he brought that to the fore in the two games. He played really, really well, so I think the manager would be delighted with that. We all knew we had a bit of strength and depth at centre back with Collins and Dar O'Shea. I still think Dar O'Shea should be starting in the team, but because Jake O'Brien has emerged in recent weeks, he got his goal last night, but we are lucky in that regard. I still think centre midfield, there's probably room for one or two. We're a little bit lightweight, I feel, in there. Cullen does okay, Jason Knight as well, but I think we can strengthen up in there. But certainly at the back end of the pitch and the top end, I think we have plenty of options there for the manager.
Stephen, do you think you're happy enough with the way that the squad is developing, and that there will be enough choice? Because we always wondered where the goals are coming from, and now we can see a couple of paths where we're sort of hopeful.
Yeah, I think what's really nice about the choice the manager's starting to have is that he's not playing really. It's not style over substance. He's playing kind of a nice way that gets the players into the forward areas quite quickly. And I think if you can add into the fact that genuine pace and wide areas, so the likes of Ebisele and Ogbeni come back, I don't think the manager will misuse them. I think if he has them as options, he'll use them in the best way fit to get them high up the pitch and cause team problems, which then will help us going forward. So I think it's nice having options when you don't have to just get everybody to fit into a rigid system that doesn't always suit everybody. The manager's shown that he's willing to adapt slightly in those forward areas to get the best out of players actually on the pitch, which I think is a really nice way to go about it, instead of just going, this is how we're playing and you play this way, because that doesn't always work. But I think if we get everybody fit and everybody playing, it's unbelievable options for the manager to have. And that puts us in a position where you feel we can have a right go at this. Like the two games and the qualifiers, the first two games, like for how long have we gone into competitions and thought we're out of competition as soon as it started? Whereas we're going into this now thinking if we win those first two matches, we have a great chance.
Okay.
What chance we would have. What way, Alan, will he play the Senegal and Luxembourg games? Will he set them out with the teams he wants to start those two World Cup qualifiers with?
Yeah, again, it just depends on the timing, Ruby, off the back of the season that the players will have. But I certainly, he spoke a lot in the build-up to these games about continuity in the team selection. And sometimes, like in an ideal world, of course, you'd want your 10 or 11 playing every week, but that's not always the case in international football. But I certainly think coming off the back of the two victories that we've seen now, and the majority of kind of 5, 6, 7 starting in both games, I would go strong in those friendlies as well. Now, the only thing, the friendlies are strange choices for me, because you're playing Senegal, like an African nation, and then we're going into games against Armenia and Hungary, and they're not going to be like for like, if you know what I mean. So I maybe would have chosen a couple of different friendlies. It might have been out of their hands, I don't know. But just certainly in terms of the approach and the preparation for those qualifiers, I'd be going strong and keeping the momentum going. Because the one thing that struck me, Ruby, more so than ever, in the build-up to not the game yesterday, a little bit yesterday, but more so in the game Thursday, how little chat around these games there was in town or in around the place. There was no interest in these games whatsoever, and that's just indicative of where Ireland find themselves at the moment. You said you were watching the golf instead of the match last night, so that was probably happening in a lot of households around the country this past week. But I think the fact that we got the couple of victories, there's a lot of positivity around today, a lot of talk, a lot of chatter about it. I think you have to keep that momentum going and keep it building, because it hasn't been there for so long. And if we get two good performances in the friendlies, try and get minutes for lads as well, but go strong in the games and win the games. And then that sets you up, as Stephen said, for those games in September against Armenia and Hungary. Two, winnable games, yeah. I would definitely say Armenia got hammered yesterday in their game over the two legs, and Hungary got hammered by Turkey as well. So they're winnable games, and we could get ourselves off to a really good start in the campaign, feel as though we're in the fight, and then all of a sudden things are really looking up for us.
Stephen, we're a little tight for time, but in a as briefly as you can, is Portugal a good draw, or would Denmark have been better?
I prefer Denmark. I think easier beatable. But Portugal, listen, at some point we're going to take a scalp to get qualified, and you might as well take Portugal as a scalp. Who wouldn't want to have Ronaldo as down as one on your hit list?
Very good, very concise. Thank you very, very much.
There you go.
Andrew, I do believe we have an interview to play for Mark Canham as well. That's Shane Dawson did earlier.
Yes, our own Shane Dawson spoke to the Chief Footballing Officer of the FAI, Mark Canham, and they spoke about a couple of things, including an apology, a deserved apology to the former women's assistant coach, Colin Healy. Mark Canham sat down with Shane Dawson today.
You're coming up to 3 years in the role. Were you surprised with how fractured Irish football is?
I did my research before I joined the association. We spent a lot of time in creating our plan, consulted a lot of people, went around the country. I would say there are clearly some unique elements of Irish football that are different to other countries, but I've worked in different countries, spent a lot of time working with people in FIFA, same with UEFA, and lots of people, lots of organisations are dealing with some of the same challenges that we're dealing with.
Do you reflect on your tenure to date as a success?
I mean, there's lots of things to consider when you ask that question. I think there's lots of positive things that happened. I appreciate that some of the noise, for want of a better word, would maybe lead you to look at different things, but I think there's lots of things that are positive. We've got a really clear plan. We've had some success recently with our international teams, but my role isn't just about the senior teams, it's about the whole pathway. And what I hope most is the things that we're putting in place around the aligned football calendar, the tier three for the men's, the education, the women and girls action plan, and all these other things that we've got will see success over a period of time.
You mentioned just regrets over to Colin Healy on a personal level, and not just that. My question isn't focused on that, but broadly speaking, would you do anything different reflecting on your tenure? Have you learned anything in particular?
In my job?
Yeah.
I genuinely believe in what we're doing. There are every experience, there's development and learning out of that in terms of every communication, everything that you do. So I have to reflect and think there's different things you could do differently. But overall, I have an absolute fundamental belief in what we're doing is the right thing to do for Irish football.
Just in order for everyone to be singing off the same hymn sheet, have you had conversations with, say, Stephen Bradley, Damien Duff, about how everyone can be pulling in the same direction?
Yeah, I've seen some of the commentary from different people, and when these people speak, they're significant figures in Irish football. People respect their views and their opinions. I respect what they've done, what they continue to do, and I think it's great what they're doing for Irish football. And we continue to engage with all of the different stakeholders in Irish football, from grassroots all the way, including League of Ireland coaches. And I understand what you're asking. We did some events at the end of last year. We're trying to engage with those coaches. I've seen some of the individuals that you've talked about at different meetings, events, and talk to them. And we continue to engage with everyone. And it's important to engage with all of the people that ultimately are delivering Irish football.
How does Hamer Halgrimsson fit into the FAI's long-term vision for the men's national team?
Look, we're really positive about him. I have been ever since he joined us. I think hopefully people are starting to see some early signs of success. He's here to try and help us progress on the pitch, also support some broader things off the pitch, and ultimately, like, his first aim is to try and get us to our first major competition, which will be, if that's achieved, it'll be the first time in 10 years. Ultimately, his main focus is to win football matches, to pick the best players at the best level, and get us to a major tournament, and that's the biggest thing that he can help Irish football with.
Final question, how important is the government funding for the future of Irish football from grassroots up?
It's critical to have that level of funding. You saw last year with the equipment funding and the infrastructure funding, the level of investment that we got by being proactive, both us as the association, clubs, and also all of the affiliates and organisation in the game, what we can do collectively if we work together. We do need more, we want more, but we thank them for their support so far. It is really critical to get that investment into academies to support that, future generations of Irish players, and that is something that we'll continue to work with government on over the next period of time and in collaboration with the clubs.
That is Mark Canham talking to our own Shane Dawson, and you can hear that full interview. It's now available on the Game On podcast feed. Alan, he seems to be a very honest guy and a good speaker, Mark.
Yeah, he comes across well. He's quite polished, speaks well, but you want to see action, to be honest with you, Andrew. It's okay coming on an interview and speaking about the things that you're hoping to do. You want to see action and want to see things done. It's a difficult job. The first question Shane asked him there was about how was he surprised how fractured Irish football is. He's 3 years in. I think it still is fractured, and that's a difficult thing to try and fix. But there's plans in place. But the key thing, and they touched on it right at the end, it's critical, and that's the word that was used, that to get the funding to try and improve academies here. The onus is on us now, Andrew. I spoke about, obviously, facilities at the start of the show. The onus is on us as people and as clubs now to try and develop our own players, to try and get us to major tournaments, and that won't happen unless the funding is in place, because it's hard enough for League of Ireland clubs to run one team, but to be trying and running four or five academy teams on top of women's teams as well, they have to get the funding in place. And I'm not as hopeful as I was with the previous government regime. The new one that's come in with the new sports minister wasn't very kind of promising in his comments that he made a couple of weeks ago. But I hope if he ever listens to a sports show that he realises just how critical it is, that this is a must for Irish football.
There's Alan Colley's plea. He'll be running in the next general election if the sports minister doesn't give him the dough. We have a quick break to take. Join us after the break first. Brendan Devaney will talk football.
2FM. Game on.
Gaelic football.
Welcome back to Game On. It is 6:41 this Monday evening, and delighted to say myself and Ruby are joined, as you heard already, by Austin O'Malley, who is a former Allianz Football League champion with Wicklow.
That's correct, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, many, many moons ago, but I remember it well. Yeah, Division 4 title. We were lucky enough to beat Fermanagh on that particular day. Tight game, but yeah, always remembered.
Yeah, it was a great, great day for Wicklow as well, because we sometimes gloss over Division 3 and Division 4, but for the players who put all their life in and their training in and all that effort.
Ah, yeah, no, it's incredible. And again, like for one of maybe the smaller counties that obviously populate the lower divisions, it was another chance to get into Croke Park and experience Croke Park and play in the National Stadium. So yeah, they're really, really special days any day you get to Croke Park and that there's a national title on the line, and I think it should be so.
Yes, indeed. Ruby, I presume before you got to the golf and to the soccer, you were watching a good bit of football yesterday afternoon, and what a day it was.
Keeping a close eye on Kildare and also what was happening with Clare versus Offaly. Obviously the goal difference, or the score difference there, was going to be relevant to what happened with Kildare, but Kildare went up and they will face Offaly in the Division 3 final. Wexford and Limerick are in the Division 4 final, but Brendan, I'm not going to lie, I was really was glued to Division 1, and it was interesting stuff from the word go.
It was, I mean, there were calculators blowing up all over the place throughout the afternoon.
It was incredible. Like, it was just, you'd want the abacus out, or, you know, there was at times there you were trying to crunch numbers and you're looking at a couple of different screens, the way that, you know, the different permutations were racking up, and you know, even in our own case down in Mayo, I was watching the game at around the 62nd or 63rd minute, we were potentially relegated. And 6 or 8 minutes later, we were heading for a National League final.
And Kerry were relegated at one point as well, weren't they?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And like, I suppose it was a really strange, I suppose, finale to the National League, in that we even had the likes of Tyrone going down, which historically, you know, 7 points would have been enough to keep you up. And I don't think any team has ever gone down before in 7 points from since the, you know, the whole new format of the league. So there was an awful lot in play on the day, and it was right to, you know, to the final whistles right across the four leagues till we had everything sort of, the sediment had settled and you'd understood who's gone up, who's gone down,
sediment settling.
So it was an extraordinary weekend.
Yes.
Marston, I must say I love some of the kick passing. Even watching Tyrone yesterday, a couple of their crossfield balls to create scoring chances for themselves. Like, all the moaning different people within the sport are doing about the rule changes, God, from a spectator, they haven't half worked.
I think it has really opened the game up, and I think maybe the one that you're maybe referencing there is just McCurry's crossfield ball, even to Canavan, and that was just sublime. And it, like, in the old system, it's something we haven't seen in the game, you know, because obviously it would be overly populated in there, and there were probably 2-3 guys back closing off Canavan. But what was, like, I was just watching that segment of the game, and even when McCurry got that ball, like, once he got in his hand, you could see Canavan backing off his man. And I've said it on the show here before, I just think the telepathy between these two guys is extraordinary, and I think they bring the best out in one another. And it's brilliant to see that kind of crossfield kicking and that, you know, more open space. And just even from Friday night, I referenced before, I was at the awards show, but talking to, there was obviously a good smattering of inter-county footballers there as well, and that, and just chatting to them, and they were saying, like, even how training now is almost more enjoyable, because, you know, you're not drilling this because as a coach you had to drill for a packed defence, so half your training was probably taken up where, you know, you're drifting numbers back and you're trying to give guys the shape and the scenario and the pictures of what they're going to be facing on the weekend. So they're creating a lot more one-on-one contests, and guys are even enjoying training, I think, a little bit more by virtue of it. So it's really good to see.
And I suppose let's start off, I suppose, with the having a quick look ahead to the finals, because, you know, there were only 2 points off between Mayo in first place and Tyrone in seventh place. Just remarkable stuff. But at the end of the day, Mayo will take on Kerry next weekend.
Yeah, like,
it's exciting.
I know, it really is. And I suppose, like, I think I read something somewhere today where somebody said it was like almost like a slow bicycle race where both of them were trying not to finish first, but they got across the line anyways. But I suppose from a Mayo perspective, they're going into it looking that they'll have a quicker turnaround, obviously, being out against Sligo the following week in the Connacht Championship and that. But you would think at this stage, in terms of the experience and the collective know-how that Mayo have, that from previous, that they would be able to manage that, whether they win or lose, and in terms of the turnaround. I think it ideally suits Kerry because they have a longer run, and obviously they got that month. So this, you know, kind of takes another week out of the equation for them and that. And I think the league has been good for Kerry in terms of that they've developed quite a little bit of depth in their bench and that. And, you know, another sojourn in Croke Park in a week's time will really help that as well. And I think Jack O'Connor will be, you know, very, very pleased in terms of getting another game in there. And as I said, Mayo should be, you know, experienced enough to be able to navigate that now.
Austin, how much damage does it do to Derry and Tyrone to go down?
Yeah, it's an interesting one from the perspective of, I suppose, Derry. Like I would have said before, I thought in different pockets within games, I thought Derry had, you know, played quite well. But I suppose you cannot step away from the fact that they've taken a couple of thumpings. The one yesterday, I think, could really, really hurt in terms of the concession of, you know, what they did concede against Armagh. It like, you would think when you look through that Derry squad that they have certainly enough to come right back up again. They have an awful lot of quality, but there has been a marked drop off in their kind of collective performances over the last two seasons. So you'd wonder when they are going to actually sort of get it together again and kick on. From a Tyrone perspective, I think, you know, you could, it depends how they frame this and shape this. They went down with 7 points, as I said, you know, from a historical perspective, that has never happened before in the league. And I think maybe, you know, looking at their situation and set up, the fact that they didn't have the Errigal Kieran lads for a lot of that league really, really did affect them. So there was a couple of games in the middle of the league there where, particularly I think the game against Mayo, where they looked very lacklustre in McHale Park that evening and still could have won that game. And then the game in Pomeroy where, you know, they were 5 or 6 points up against Kerry. Kerry were down to 13 men and they still didn't see it out. So the little bit of inconsistency there. But I think, again, when you look at the quality that both of these teams are, you really think that they should rebound and come back up.
What about Desi Farrell's Dublin?
Yeah, Desi, like, very disappointed, I think he was, by just sort of the lack of maybe, what do you say, interest or
fight?
Fight, maybe, yeah, was a better word. You know, you'd have thought going to Tyrone that they'd have mustered up a little bit more. Now, given that Tyrone obviously played with the wind in the first half going down into the Killyclaher end, and they racked up, you know, a big score, and it wasn't, I didn't feel even at half time that it was maybe gone from Dublin, but I thought that sort of third quarter Dublin push, I thought it was going to come, but they were really, really inaccurate. And I thought some of the younger guys who we'd seen a little bit from before didn't step up and maybe just didn't show the leadership that was necessary there. And so from a Dublin perspective, I think Desi he'll be happy in terms of staying in Division 1. He has definitely developed a little bit, but their form has been patchy, and I don't think you'd probably be best pleased with certainly yesterday's performance.
Would you fancy going into training in Galway this week to face Pádraig Joyce after the weekend?
Yeah, I suppose that's two on the bounce that they've lost now. I think the biggest concern really from Galway's perspective, maybe looking at it there, like, they hemorrhaged 3.24 against Kerry this weekend, and also looked quite open against Dublin the previous weekend and were inaccurate. And some of those things were like, when you look at it on the balance of it, there are things that they need to really go after. And I know he was without, obviously, Shane Walsh, who like is a key, you know, part of the whole jigsaw for them in terms of their scoring and their efficiency and that. But they have a lot to work on. They have all the credentials to go deep in the championship. Obviously, we've seen it, but they need to tidy themselves up. They've, as I've alluded to there, they've hemorrhaged quite a lot, but they still have a lot of quality.
In Division 2, Austin and Monaghan and Roscommon obviously going to play the final. Both of those are promoted. And if they're as free scoring as they started the league off, they won't be out of place, will they? Or will they struggle to stay up there?
No, listen, interesting, I suppose, when you look at Roscommon, we've seen that they've been a bit of a yo-yo team over the last number of years, you know, in terms of being relegation and promoted and back up again. Arguably, when you look at Roscommon, like, you look at the firepower they have up front, they have enough to stay up there without a doubt. Monaghan seem to have, you know, really, really kind of come and have had a really solid league campaign. And you would think, you know, given their history in Division One before, obviously, that they had maintained their status there up to last year when they dropped, that they would be, you know, ably placed to stay there. Interestingly, just looking across the four divisions, though, out of the nine Ulster teams, four of them actually have been relegated down through. So I'm just wondering, is there anything in that in terms of, you know, we've often looked at, you know, Ulster teams being, you know, they were the artists of the, you know, mass defences and they were really, really good at that. So I'm just wondering if the game, the way it has opened up, has it caught them a little bit?
Yeah, Down relegated as well from Division 2 and Antrim relegated from Division 3. A lot of excitement, Ruby, in Kildare. I suppose it's great to see Kildare making forward movements and they're promoted. They'll take on Offaly in the final. Is there good excitement down Kildare way?
There's hope anyway. Where there's light, there's hope, Andrew. But Austin, what do you think? Can Kildare cut it in Division 2? I mean, they were woeful last year. Like,
yeah, look, I really think Kildare need to go after this in terms of when they go back up there again. I firmly believe they have the quality to stay up there. I think they have a good man in charge in terms of, you know, his finger on the pulse in terms of the underage setup in Kildare and what has come through there. And I think he's ideally placed to get the best out of these. But I think the Kildare player base as well really need to sort of maybe shake themselves and decide that it's time now maybe to step up and really deliver when they get up there. There's no question with regards, I think, the quality that's there, but it's about that little bit of leadership and taking ownership now, and I think, and really driving on. They've rebounded back up and as I said, the quality is there. It's just a matter from a player base deciding that they're really going to go for it.
And Wexford and Limerick on the way up as well to Division 3.
Yeah, looking at Wexford's form, they're the only team across the four divisions that haven't lost a game. So they've been brilliant, and they were really, really unlucky last year not to go up. You know, there was a really tough decision. I think it was in the Leitrim game that caught them, where if they had won that game, I think it was a goal in the end that caught them that shouldn't have been when looked back. So they're a team that have played a lot of good football, hit a lot of big scores across. But also Limerick have under Jimmy Lee, who is I think he's just kind of re-energized Limerick again, and they've climbed back up there again. And maybe a note on that yesterday, and I suppose as a former forward you're always looking for standout operators in that division, but James Nocton hit 4-12 for Limerick yesterday, which is an incredible feat. 4-3 from play, and I'm not sure, is that a record? I don't think I've ever seen that come in across a division
in
before.
In football, probably, yes.
Yeah. In cricket, maybe not.
No.
Yeah, but in football, I just thought it's worth the mention because...
Absolutely. I wanted to ask you just very briefly on the league overall. It was a different league this year. Obviously, we'd new rules to absorb, contend with, understand, try and strategize. It made it all much more important, didn't it?
It did, yeah, it did. And it brought a sort of sense of newness and a freshness to the whole thing. And I think just with the introduction of the rules and the new rules, the opening up of the game, as Ruby alluded to there, in terms of just, you know, it's more a transitional game now, obviously, with more space. We're seeing, you know, greater sort of, you know, scoring across the board. And like, obviously the rules have been tweaked as they've moved on through, and it's caused a little bit of conjecture among you know, managers and that as well. But I think on the balance of it, I think it's been an exciting league, even that we're down to the last day there and still with an awful lot to play and an awful lot in the balance. I think it's been worthwhile. And as I've said there, just, you know, from tapping into maybe players across different teams and that over the last number of weeks, everybody seems to be enjoying it. And even the fact that people are re-energised by going to training and having more 1v1 contests, and there's a bit more figuring out. I think there's great scope in it as well from a coaching perspective to get a little bit more creative and innovative. I thought previously where the game was, there was a lot of kind of same in terms of we'll all drop numbers back, we kind of mirror what each other are doing, and then we transition quick and so on. So I think it's been a worthwhile exercise, and I think there's been a lot of good football played, notwithstanding that maybe the problem with the National League at the moment is just that little bit of extra space that's needed at the end between the final and maybe the following
chapter. No space, boy. No space at all. Austin O'Malley, thank you very much for joining us. We've got the league finals coming up next weekend and we've got the championship straight away. The excitement will keep on rolling, as it does now, because Niall Moran is on the phone. Niall, happy Monday to you.
How are you doing, lads?
Good, good. We're very good. Straight into the hurling. We've got about 4 minutes to talk about this, so not for a whole lot of time, but let's, I suppose, start with Cork and Tipperary. They're going to go head-to-head at Super Value Parky Cueve, and it should be a cracker at 4 o'clock.
Amazing to think 1960 since the last met in the league final, and wow. Also really amazing to think that it's 27 years since Cork last tasted a title, and I think it's kind of, for Tipperary, they're really going into the lines then, because there'll be a huge Cork crowd out there, and I think Cork will really be hoping to win that National League. But look, they're very impressive, 4-22, big score, 10 goals in the last two games, but probably a bigger point of note is not conceding a goal in the last two games. And as I said, forwards win games, but defences win championships, and that is a sign of what's coming down the line maybe for teams. They are in a very, very strong position. And similarly, Tipperary, whilst they might have went under the radar on Saturday night, they really came back from 8 points down to outscore Tipperary 13-4 in the last 24 or 5 minutes and to win by a point. And whilst to the outsiders it might seem like a dead rubber and both teams are missing guys, when you're inside in the camp, the key is kind of maintaining that consistency, and that is another filler up for the two of them. So look, deservedly both teams in the league final, really exciting. But I suppose from after the league final, it's really, we're going to see a true picture of where all these teams are at.
You most certainly will see a true picture. What about the 1B final, Offaly and Waterford? Waterford coming straight back up, sorry. Offaly, good to see a traditional hurling county back on the front foot.
Yeah, really competitive there. So look at the sending off there. Very, very contentious sending off of James Mahan, and probably the game kind of swung on it. Look, there was probably 2 or 3 points in it at the time. Waterford went about 5 or 6 up on the back of it. And again, look, to be fairness to Offaly, they really showed character. They stuck into it. And in the second half, there were 2 up. And to be honest, only for the turning point of Billy Nolan with a great save from penalty from Brian Dignan. And I suppose ultimately, down the last 15 or 20 minutes of sending off of the tolls, and like Offaly or Waterford scored the last 8 points. But look, all in all, it's very hard to gauge where some of the stronger teams are at in the league. And I suppose you're going to look at Limerick, you're going to look at Clare, you're going to even look at, obviously, Kilkenny. There's a level of inconsistency about their play, worrying times maybe for Galway in that. Look, to be honest, they were probably fortunate to get out of Wexford with a win, and if they hadn't, I think we might have seen that they would have been the ones in the receiving end of relegation, as opposed to Wexford, who were excellent on Saturday night. And then, I suppose, look, Tip and Cork look to be the front runners in league form, but as we all well know, league form can sometimes be well and truly torn up as the summer progresses.
It most certainly can. Obviously, Limerick have slumped a little bit, but what about Brian Lowen and Clare? Like their league season was.
They'll have been disappointed because look, they were 10-8 up at half time of playing with a win. They'd have been disappointed with first half performance, but then, do you know what I mean? They went 13. They went off in after the next 4 or 5 scores in the second half, and you just said that they'd have kicked on, but they were caught at the end, and like that's a little bit of a worry. And look, no different than Limerick, you could be disingenuous to the league and say these things don't matter, and sure, they weren't trying, and I've yet seen anybody who ever went out in the sporting field not to try. So look, ultimately, and it's not trying to sit on the fence, but in relation to Limerick and Clare's form, like they do have a lot of money in the bank over the last few years, and I suppose, like, do you know what I mean? They will draw on all that experience in the first round. But again, I'm going to reiterate, I think Waterford are a team just to be watched. I just think even the nature of how they won the game yesterday, or on Saturday coming down the home stretch, and they have Limerick and Clare coming into Walsh Park, and if they can take a win in one of those games, especially the Clare game, given that Clare have played Cork the previous week, I think it could really turn Munster for one up in its head.
And Niall, do you think Tipperary will be able to hold Cork, or will Cork keep that scoring mode going?
I would fancy Cork. I genuinely would fancy Cork. I think Tipperary have been excellent. There's been consistency about them, and I suppose even what was very pleasing for them on Saturday night was their bench made a huge impact. Brian O'Mara, Darragh Staclan with the winner, Gerard O'Connor. It's a really acid test for that Tipperary back. So like John Reno O'Connolly full back is probably new to the position. Like they've had a lot of kind of changes in that department in the full back line, and if they can withstand that, they'll withstand anything. But there is a tornado coming down, and like again, it's a little bit feeding into the into the kind of hype machine that's going with Cork. It'll be a big crowd below in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. They're kind of baying for that title, and just, you know, it would set them rightly up for summer if they got it. And look, a world, obviously, no different to what Aston spoke about. Our own man here in Limerick scoring yesterday, James Nathan. I think a word of note to Patrick Horgan again, just I suppose, topping the all-time scoring rate. It's immense. And look, as just on a very, very much side note, as a child growing up, there's very few hurlers that wouldn't have read Val Dorgan's book and Christy Ring and all his feats, and I suppose the longevity of Christy in his career. And I suppose there is a parallel between their clubmen, and I think there's also a parallel in their attitude towards the game, that it, like I said, the hurling never leaves them. They're really, really special hurling people. They live it, they breathe it. Even how he spoke before last year's All-Ireland semi-final or All-Ireland final, openly about the game. I just think, look, again, it's an indictment on that at this stage of his career, he's breaking records for a guy that 3 or 4 years ago people questioned his Cork career, and yet he goes from strength to strength. So, look, fair play to him on that note over the weekend.
Well said, Niall. And we have to say our appetites are well and truly whetted ahead of the league finals and the championship. Thanks to all of our guests tonight. That's all myself and Ruby have time for. We're actually well over time, so apologies to Rachel Mayhannon, who is next after the new music show. Myself and Ruby are back for tomorrow, and after the break, it is the news.